for joining, whether from the US, Israel, Palestine, or any other place in the world. My name is Gilly Getz. I'm the board member of Partners for Progressive Israel, and I'll be your moderator for today for this conversation. This is another installment of Partners Conversation with Israel and Palestine, a series that of informational webinar that, brings voices from Israel and Palestine to American audiences and provide an important link between progressives in the U.S. and in the Middle East. Partners for Progressive Israel is an American nonprofit organization dedicated to the achievement of durable and just peace between Israel and its neighbors, and believes in the need to ensure civil rights, equality, and social justice for all of Israel's inhabitants. Partners seek to deepen Americans' understanding of Israel's complexity so they can better advocate for progressive Israeli future and an end to the occupation. Currently, our main focus is preventing Israel's unilateral annexation of the occupied territory. And we invite everyone to visit the Stop Annexation Now page on our website for information and upcoming programming. Also, we are in the midst of Stop Annexation Now Matching Grant Challenge. We invite you to contribute, where every donation is matched dollar for dollar. Partner is thrilled to be hosting this dialogue and meeting stories of bereavement and hope with American friends of Parent Circle, Family Forum. This is extremely special for me. I first came across this extraordinary work many years ago in the joint Israeli-Palestinian memorial service. And it deeply, deeply touched me and transformed me in a very fundamental way. And I hope you get to see some of this incredible work of hope and peace and reconciliation that comes out of the darkest places and unimaginable pain and loss. I'm honored to be here with the executive director, Shiri Orian, from American Friends of Family Forum, who would introduce our, hi Shiri, who would introduce our today's panelist.
Hi Gili. I think we first met at that Memorial Day ceremony many moons ago, and it's nice to reconnect now. And I wouldn't say it's come full circle, but we continue on together meeting. And I am so grateful that Partners for Progressive Israel is hosting us here today. So thank you to you and to Partners for having us. My name is Shiri Orian. I'm the executive director of the American Friends of the Parent Circle Families Forum. We are an American organization that raises support and awareness for the incredible work that the Parent Circle Families Forum is doing among Israelis and Palestinians to promote reconciliation. And I will have the honor to introduce two of our members, and they will share with you their stories today of loss and pain, as shared pain, but also stories of hope. And I think that that is really the most in these dark days, especially around annexation. I think that that is the gift that the Parent Circle Families Forum has to offer, is a sense of hope. I just a little bit about the organization. It's an organization made up of 600 bereaved Israeli and Palestinian members. Everyone who is a member has lost a loved one, a close family member, to the conflict. And they have made the unique and extraordinary decision to say that that there is another way, that there should be no more bereavement, that violence is not the answer, that the pain is the same pain on both sides, and that more violence will only lead to more bereavement and more pain, and that reconciliation, dialogue, empathy, acknowledgement of the other side's narrative is the way to end this conflict and to prevent any future bereavement. We have our two members are here today, but I just wanted to ask you for a moment to recognize that In addition to these members and the 600 families, we also have a 12-person staff. Actually, Gili Meisler, who's our member, is also on our staff. And we have two offices, a Palestinian office, an Israeli office. We have a huge alumni community from our educational programs in the field. So without more about that, without further ado, I want to share with you Moira and Gili. Moira is a Palestinian. She is speaking with us today from Jerusalem, where she lives. We had a chance to catch up with Moira beforehand, and she told us all about the incredible adventures of her daughters. Moira lost her husband in 2010, and she joined the Parent Circle almost immediately after, several months after he was killed. Moira is an active dialogue meeting facilitator. So what you hear today sharing, she does very often in schools, in front of international groups. And Gili Meisler is here from Tel Aviv. He's Israeli. He lost his brother Giora while Giora was serving in the Yom Kippur War in 1973. Gili joined the Parent Circle. He became a member in 2014 after he participated in one of our programs called the Parallel Narrative Experience. And I'm sure Gili will tell you more about that when he speaks. And as I mentioned, he's also a staff member. He's the manager of new media at the Parent Circle. And I think that Gili and Moira, you guys often do dialogue meetings together. So I don't know who usually goes first, but you guys, I thought it was ladies first, Gili.
I'd like to add that before we start, if anyone has questions, please type them in the Q&A box. The button is on the bottom of your screen, and you can type them at any time, and we'll get to them. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Me and Moira have done this quite a few times, and I'm the first one just because we are used to it. Let me just, before we start, say this, that each one of us, and I will be the first one, will share with you our personal story. And then you're most welcome to ask us any question. And as Moira and me said, say that we heard it all. So you really don't have to be scared or shy. Let me also just very briefly tell you some more information about us, about the Parent Circle Families Forum, which was actually an idea of Itzhak Frankenthal, his name, in 1994, when all of the country for 2 days looked for his son, Eric, who went hitchhiking out of his army base towards his home. And after 2 days, they found his body. And during the morning time, you know, this week, Itzhak, the father, which is an Orthodox Jew, decided that he must do something with the pain he felt, something that is not going towards hate and revenge, but towards reconciliation. It took him some time, several months, and he gathered a few dozens of other parents who felt the same like he did, bereaved, of course. And they established this organization, which, in the beginning, the name was the Parent Circle, but then we changed it because obviously we are not only parents, we are wives, brothers, sisters, etc. 1998, they decided to open the organization to Palestinians, bereaved Palestinians. It's a little bit funny to think about it today, when actually the first few dozens of Palestinian members came from Gaza. And then in the beginning of 2000, many others joined from the West Bank. And as Shiri said, we are about 600, about half, 620 members. Let me also say that we are doing lots of things. And I will mention very, very shortly our two main activities and all the other information you can see and read in our website, thepresscircle.org. You can also sign into our newsletter. It's a three languages website. We've done many things, art exhibitions. Every year we are doing with the other organization, the Combatants for Peace, the Memorial Day ceremony. We try to do every International Peace Day something, and many other activities. So let me just mention our two main activities. One, the first one is what we are doing here now, dialogue meeting. We started that in the beginning of 2000. Since then, we've done more than 5,000 meetings in front of more than 200,000 people. The other activity is what we call the narrative project. What we do is we create a group of 30 people, 15 Israelis and 15 Palestinians, which all have something in common. Like, we had groups that they were all doctors, journalists, even grandmothers. And what we do is they meet from time to time for several months, including weekend. And the purpose is that each side will share and will learn about the other side, the personal and national narrative. The peaks of that project are when one day they all go to Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Museum in Jerusalem, in order that this is an opportunity for the Palestinians to learn about the most traumatic event in the Jewish history. And then in another day, they all go to one of the about 500 villages were demonstrated during Independence Day, and for the Palestinians is their Nakba, is their catastrophe, which is an opportunity for the Israelis to understand that. So I think this is all for now, and if you will have any more questions about the organization, you're most welcome in the end. So let me start and share with you my personal story. So my name is Gili, and I was born in 1961 in Jerusalem, which makes me 59 years old. Let me tell you a little bit about my parents. I was the first one that was born here in Israel. My parents came from Russia, from the USSR, in 1958, with their only kid, a child, 4 years old, my brother, Gioa. And my father was a mathematician. Actually, when they came to Israel, he joined the Hebrew University, and he was a very famous mathematician, very, very well known for his abilities to teach. He knew Hebrew fluently because he came from a very Zionist family. He knew Hebrew from birth. Then I was 1961. My mother took more time to learn and to speak Hebrew. In 1964, if I remember correctly, she started to work at the Israeli radio in a small department, in the Russian department. That was a special department that was broadcasted to those Jews who were left in the USSR in short ways, if you are not too young and you remember what's that. I don't know if you know, but from 1960 until 1970, Jews were not allowed to go out of the USSR, were not allowed to speak Hebrew, to read Hebrew. And they used to hear this broadcast secretly. She also became very, very famous. She was like, people say that in the early 70s, when they opened the, and they let the Jews go out of Russia, when the newcomers came to Israel, the first place they went is to the Western Wall. And the second place was to look for my mother in the radio station. Actually, I heard it so many times, which I guess it's cool. Don't have anything special to say about our childhood. We lived in a very small apartment in Jerusalem, three bedrooms, my parents' living room, and me and my brother in the same room, most of the time fighting. 7 years difference between the two of us. It was my parents' dream to move to a bigger apartment in North. In 1972, my brother finished high school. His main subject was Arabic and Eastern studies. He knew how to speak, how to write, how to read Arabic very well. Also, as today, also that time, those people, the army wanted to take them to the intelligence, but my brother didn't, like he refused because he wanted to be a fighter. That time it was quite a big prestige to be in the tanks, so he joined the tanks. 1973, he was 1 year in the army. Yom Kippur. He was supposed to come in that year, Yom Kippur, the 6th of October, was Saturday and Sunday. Sorry, Friday and Saturday. He was supposed to come that weekend. Atheist family, we don't fast, it's, you know, and my mother prepared a meal. And then on Thursday, 2 days before, he called us on the phone. And said that he will not be able to come. Didn't explain why. And then Friday, Yom Kippur Eve, and then Saturday, when all of a sudden, in 10 minutes before 2 p.m., siren in the whole country. There isn't anybody who lived that time in Israel who forgets that 2 minutes. And the Yom Kippur War started when Syria from the north, Egypt from the south, attacked Israel simultaneously. Days passed, and a week passed, and 10 days passed, and 2 weeks passed. And we didn't hear anything from Giora, but that wasn't strange. Nobody heard from their dear ones. About after 2 weeks, my parents became worried and started to make phone calls to the parents of his friends, heard something, maybe they know some information. The only information my parents knew is that he was in tanks and he was fighting in the southern front against Egypt. Then on October 24 was the ceasefire, the last day of the war. Still, we didn't hear anything from him. My parents started to go to, they went to every hospital in Israel looking. They and I, good friends, came for a short leave just for a few hours to Jerusalem. His father passed away 30 days before that, so they let him go out. And then he asked his mother, maybe she heard something about the friends. And she told him, you know, about Giora, nobody heard. And then he said, how come? It's impossible. I met him in October 15. Giora was with a towel and jerrican of water, and we talked for a few minutes. And then he called my parents and let them have this information. Only in that time, the army, for the first time, there wasn't any such unit before that, established the MIA unit, the Missing in Action unit. And they started to collect some information. Let me just mention that in that time, there were about 1,500 MIA. After some time, the number shrank to a few hundreds. And in that time, our biggest hope was that my brother is a POW. One day, it was in the middle of November, at the main news, the evening in the television, they announced that Israel and Egypt made an agreement, and they exchanged the prisoners' lists. And they said that within the next 24 hours, special messengers will knock in every family and let them know that their son is a POW. I can say that that day, or that night, was the most difficult night ever for me and my parents. I know my parents in that night decided, they thought about whether to keep on living or not. I remember myself waking up in the morning, running to them, asking, did you hear anything? And they said, no. I agreed to go to the school only after they promised me that if there will be any information, they will call me. I remember myself sitting in the classroom, looking at the door all the time, hoping that, you know, the secretary will come in and say, Gili, please go home, your parents are calling you, but that didn't happen. let me say this. Before the Yom Kippur War, I was just a kid, 12 years old. Never in any way was involved in politics or such. I didn't listen to news, didn't read the newspapers. I read the newspapers, only the sports column. And after the war, after the ceasefire, I completely changed. I became very much involved. In that time, and for a long time after that, for months and months, there were so many demonstrations in Israel, especially in Jerusalem. I think I didn't miss any demonstration. I became full with hate. I simply hated all the Arabs. Looked for revenge. Started to think, how can I revenge? In that year, we studied in the school Arabic language, and I refused to come to the classes. After some time, I joined the, I don't know if you know, Kach movement, which is the Rabbi Kahana, very, very right-wing fascist movement. After some time, I left this movement because I didn't find it too I was the youngest one. Okay, time passed and we didn't, like the MIA unit investigated this case. Then it became a very, I think my brother's story, he is the most famous MIA from that war. Because of different reasons, I will not go into much details. At that time, there was another mystery when, at that time, they knew already the number of that they don't know what happened to it. And then there were some rumors and other testimonies that he was seen here and there. And they hypnotized several times this friend of his that said that he saw him. Huge story. I'm talking about main headlines in the first page of newspapers, etc. Towards the end of that year, I'm talking about now June, July, summer of 1974, I finished my seventh grade. My parents decided that they must have a change because living in our apartment just became really impossible. So many, although my parents were only 15 years in Israel, they knew so many people. My mother from work, from radio and television, my father, lots of colleagues from the university and students, and my brother. He was in different circles, in scouts and schools, etc. And our apartment became like a small train station, especially every evening and especially at weekends. So my father took a sabbatical year. And for 1 year, we moved to Toronto. Why Toronto? Because we have some very, let's say, far relatives, but very warm people who really hugged us. And all my eighth grade, they signed me into a Jewish school. Don't have too much details or important information to say about that year until one day in June. Towards the end of the year, I was in class in Toronto. And suddenly the door was opened and the secretary came in and said, "Gilly, please go home, your parents are calling you." And we lived very close, like 3 minutes walk from the school, and I went home. And there in the living room, I saw a person who came from the Israeli embassy. And he was telling us that sometime before that, 3 weeks, there was an agreement between Israel and Egypt exchanging bodies. And the Egyptians handed over 39 coffins. And he said that one of the bodies was identified with 90-something percent sureness. We're talking some years before the DNA days. And we identified your son, your brother. And then 2 days after that, we were already on the plane. Our apartment in Jerusalem was rented. So they put us in a small hotel in Jerusalem. The next day was the funeral, huge one. Because as I told you, the case was very well known. I remember the headlines in the newspaper, Giora Meisler's body was identified, but the mystery of the tank is still going on, etc. Let me tell 10 years ago, I completed a documentary, personal documentary of mine. The name of my film is Fireflies. And I'm mentioning this because in order to, like during the production of the film, I interviewed so many friends and relatives and colleagues and neighbors. And I was quite shocked to understand that almost nobody believed that this was his body. And the feeling was that they wanted to bury his story because it's too much. Then we came back to Toronto just for 2 weeks, finished our business, came back to Israel. And I started my ninth grade. Just short time after the year began, I wrote something, and then I went to a print shop, and I printed on my expense few thousands of flyers, and I every few days, very early in the morning, and stood near the gates of every high school in Jerusalem and handed over this flyer. And I, by myself, established a youth movement, very right-wing movement. We used to meet every week, and we did, we were about 50, 60 high school teenagers. And we've done so many activities, and I will not go into it. Towards the end of that year, my parents came to me one day and said, we are moving to a new apartment. As I told you, it was their dream. And you can say that now after the war, there was no need to separate me and my brother. But it was so difficult especially for my mother to be at the same apartment. She used to cry every time she got into my room. So we moved just few streets, few blocks from where we lived. A nicer apartment, nicer building, a third floor. And then one day, it was the summer between my 9th and 10th grade, I went down, and the person who was taking care of the garden and cleaning the stairs, he used to come twice or three times every week. He saw me, and like he called me. And in that year, I started to smoke cigarettes from time to time. And then he called me, and he offered me a cigarette. And I took a cigarette. And what's your name? His name is Ali. He's from East Jerusalem, some years older than me. And we started to talk. And then it became like a habit. Every day or every few days, we had our quality time with the cigarette, talking about life, laughing, talking seriously. Then after each time I left him, I thought to myself, what is going on here? I'm talking with an Arab. And I at the beginning, I couldn't understand that. And then I really started to think to myself that, so what? He's such a great guy. And what's going on here? And I refuse to be like that. Like I'm not that kind of person who hates all the Arabs, who hates all the blacks or women or gays or I don't know. I refuse to be that kind of person. The first thing that happened is that I stopped going to those meetings of the group. And that's it. This Ali changed. We kept in contact for years. He was in my wedding years after that. And I think this is a good place to stop. And please welcome my dear friend Moira. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Gilly.
Moira.
Hi. Thank you, Gilly. It's always hard to follow Gilly. And I encourage anybody to go and see his journey to find out exactly about his brother. I remember when we first met and we did a meeting and he gave me also the film. And it took a while for me to get to the film and I finally saw it. Because when you have three kids and dogs and cats, you get busy. And it really touched me. I felt like I knew him a lot more. So I encourage everybody to go and check out his film. So my name is Moira Gilani. I am originally from the Caribbean, Barbados. Born in 1967 in Bridgetown, the same hospital that Rihanna, who everybody probably knows, was born in. Life was good in Barbados. We grew up right on the beach, had very wealthy grandparents, and life was good. And then my stepfather, he moved us to America. But before that, I had moved to French Guiana. Didn't like that too much, I have to say. Very swampy and lots of mosquitoes. Moved back to Barbados, and then eventually we moved to Houston, Texas. My stepfather was a captain of a boat that supplied all the oil rigs with supplies. And that was probably the best thing that he could have done for me, because looking back now, I remember first time ever that I was able to have a choice in what I got to wear to school. And it reminds me of my children, because living here, what we call Palestine, I live in Jerusalem, and they didn't get a choice. Because it was under British rule, everybody has to wear the exact same outfit. And they can't wear any nail polish. The same thing how we were in Barbados. So I really enjoyed growing up in America compared to Barbados, even though I had the beautiful beaches and these things. And ultimately, that's where I met my husband, Ziad, who is the real Palestinian in all of this. Ziad, when he asked for my hand, he said three things. He said, one, I'm a Palestinian. Eventually, you need to know that I will return home to Palestine. These three things that I have to say to you is non-negotiable if you say yes. So he said, two, you're a Christian. At that time, I was Christian. I was born in to the Queen's religion. But I really didn't, for me, I just believed in God. I didn't believe in one particular religion per se. So he said, you're a Christian, I'm a Muslim, not a problem until we have kids. He said, when and if we have kids, I expect my kids to be raised Islamically. You can keep your religion, no one can take that from you. Three, he said he didn't believe in divorce. And that's when my antennas went up a little bit, because I had just seen the movie Not Without My Daughter, which was really scary, because even though I traveled the world, the Caribbean and America and a little bit of South America, I'd never traveled over here. I didn't know what the Middle East was about. All I had was a reference of Not Without My Daughter. And what you saw on the news. I remember when I asked, when my husband, I actually argued with him for a good 10, 15 minutes when he told me he was Palestinian. I was like, no, you're not. Because he was white with green eyes. I looked more Arab than he did. And so I argued with him for a good 10, 15 minutes. And then, I put my trust in my husband. And after my first daughter was born in the US, we moved here. And despite everything that happened, I still say it was the best decision, because I wouldn't be here where I am right now if it wasn't all those steps that I'd taken. So when I moved, it was the height of the Oslo Accords. Everybody believed that peace was really coming here to the Middle East. We had a lot of hope. So, but that was shattered when Rabin got killed. And then you had the suicide bombings, which ultimately, yes, it was intended for Israelis, but people probably don't understand or know this, but there was a lot of international workers that were on those buses and tourists and around in the area, and even Palestinians. And some of them died and a lot of them got maimed. So it was scary times. I thank God those days are over. I would never want to go back there. And despite that, my husband shielded a lot from me and my family. Whenever things were going down, he just didn't put on the news. He wouldn't tell me a lot of stuff. We just did activities together. So my story begins, was June the 11th, 2010. 10 years, a week ago, for me and my girls. It was very hard. I thank God a week ago that I was downstairs with my mother-in-law taking care of her. And it was the best day, because she usually is not very agreeable with me. And I swear my husband was there the whole time, because she agreed on everything. She was perfect. So I thank my husband and I thank my God for that day. And then I had to come upstairs and I was idle. And that's when things were really hard, when you sit and think about what happened 10 years ago. So June the 11th, 10 years ago, was a Friday. It was a really pretty day. My husband had woken up early. And he turned to me and he said, babe, he said, I'm going to go and pray in Al-Aqsa. Get the girls ready. I have three girls. Hannah, who's 27. Miraj, who's 25. And Yasmin, who's going to be 18. He said, let them decide today where they want to go and have fun. And when I come back, I'll just honk and you guys come down. Little did I know that would be the last time I would kiss my husband goodbye or ever say, see him again. And about, I think it was around anywhere between 12:30 and 1, I was getting a lot of strange phone calls saying, where's Ziad? Why isn't he home? What's going on? From a lot of people that I hadn't talked to in a long time. And I said, well, you know, maybe he left the cell phone in the car. Maybe he went into a store. He went to visit friends. And then at 2 o'clock, there was a knock at my door. And how you see me dressed today, I wasn't dressed like this 10 years ago. Even though I became a Muslim after my second daughter, Miraj, was born, my choice, I decided not to cover. And I wore normal clothes, appropriate clothes on this side. So I was dressed in my shorts and my little body waiting for my husband to take us to the beach, because that's where my daughters had planned to go. They wanted to go to Bet Yam, which is right outside of Tel Aviv. And when I opened the door, I knew. The look on Ziad's niece's face told me the story, and all those phone calls that I'd gotten just came flooding back. And I yelled, "It's Ziad." And just, I saw Aya with more tears. And I just knew, and I said, "He's dead." And she said, "Please come, my mom wants you." Now, living here on the Arabic side, how I was dressed, you do not get out of your compound looking like how I was dressed. And I went running in the streets until I made it to her mom's house. And then she told me, she said, "It is true, but I don't have any details." And we were waiting for her husband, who is Ziad's older brother, Bilal, to get back so we could find out exactly what took place. And I couldn't wait, so I got on the internet and I started surfing in English. I shouldn't have done that because everything was saying Ziad, the terrorist, has been shot and neutralized. And I knew that wasn't my husband because my husband had Israeli friends. We went to bat mitzvahs, we went to bar mitzvahs, we went to their weddings. We didn't care about the religion. We cared about the people and the character of the person. And that's how you gain your friends. So in Islam, we have 3 days of mourning. And in those 3 days, there was over 24,000 people that came to give condolences. How did we know it was 24? Because after everybody's leaving, each person leaves, they give them Arabic coffee in these little tiny cups. And every single cup, they knew how many. They stopped counting on the third day. There were still people flowing in afterwards, but it's just usually for 3 days. The first person that came, I'll never forget, because really the 3 days was like a blur, was a lady by the name of Amira Haas. For any of you that don't understand or recognize that name, she's a veteran Israeli journalist, and she works for Haaretz. And she lives in downtown Ramallah without an army. I don't even believe that she owns a gun. And she made her way to ask permission if she could find out for me from the eyewitnesses exactly what took place. Now, I'd always followed Amira, and so did my husband, because she always tells the side of the Palestinians that most people don't get to hear. And when she, and I said, "Please," because I didn't know how it worked. I didn't know what I was going to go through. So I thank God for Amira, because when she came back that night, basically is how it stands today. My husband was stuck in traffic coming back from the prayers. And you've got to put the whole context and the situation into focus. This is the height of when the Marvi Marver was trying to go into Gaza. And so there was a lot of things escalating and the tensions were really high. So my husband accidentally made an accident. And it was a soldier, and it was just a pedestrian accident. Nobody was murdered, but they shot and murdered my husband that day in the streets of Jerusalem and left him to bleed out for a good 15, 20 minutes without anybody being able to give him to see his injuries. They didn't know if he could live or not because he was still moving. There was video out there. I thank God for the EMT that was on call that actually was in the ambulance because he came to one of the days of the funeral. And he wanted to tell Ziad's last story to us. And he said that Ziad was still alive when they picked Ziad up off the ground. He said, "But I knew there was no chance." He said, "But I wanted to let you know that he was trying to say the Shahada." Now in Islam, I had to say the Shahada when I entered And when you know that you're dying, we don't wait for a preacher or a priest to give us our last rites. We have to say it when we know we're dying. And there's a rhythm to it when you're saying it with your index finger that you're supposed to follow along when you're saying the Shahada. And so my husband couldn't speak, but he was doing that. And so that's how the EMT knew that my husband knew exactly what was going on. And he told us that he had succumbed to his wounds before they reached Makassar Hospital, which is at the top of Mount Scopus. I have to tell you, I was very angry when I heard that they had left a human being on the floor, knowing that there was an ambulance a few yards away. I don't believe in revenge. I don't seek revenge for my husband. I think it's a waste of time. But I wanted to get justice, and I wanted to clear my husband's name because it's still out there that my husband is a terrorist. You can still find, if you write in my husband's name, even though he's been cleared, but I had to fight tooth and nail. And on my journey, a few months afterwards, after I was serving my mourning period, my husband's best friend, who at that time was working with the parents' circle as a driver, taking us back and forth to our meetings, he called me up and he said, I have somebody here that I'd like you to talk to. Do you mind if I bring them over? And I said, sure. And he brought this lady by the name of Siham. Siham lives in Beit Omar. Beit Omar, if for those that don't know where it is, it is stationed between Bethlehem and Hebron. If you drive towards Beit Omar and you don't know where you're going, you will drive right past it. There is no sign saying this is Beit Omar, but it's completely surrounded on all sides by settlements. Now there's signs for those settlements, but none for Beit Omar. And she was telling me the story about her brother Yusuf and how he was murdered. And it was the same story as my husband, the exact same story. The only difference was it was Yusuf and it was at a checkpoint. So to be honest with you, I'm kind of ashamed to say it. When she asked me to join the parents' circle, I was more curious to know about Siham, because anybody that's lived here long enough knows that most women in the rural areas do not get the education that my husband's sisters and family and my daughters would have gotten. Most of the women in the rural areas of the West Bank, they're not only under occupation by the Israelis, but I have to say they're probably under occupation by their husbands and by men. They don't get to finish school, a lot of them. They probably don't even get to choose who they get married to. So I was more concerned and wanted to know more about this lady who had never seen peace before. How did she make those steps towards her enemy? Because for me, for me it was easy. I was, born in the islands. But I wanted to know about her. And on that journey, I had met Rami Elchanan. And I went to listen to a meeting that Rami Elchanan was having. And I can't even remember who the Arabic speaker was with him. But I was just bawling. And I, right there and then, I wanted to join. Because his story was about his beautiful daughter, his only daughter that he had, and how he had lost her. And I knew right there and then that this was the group that I wanted to be in. And that was about 4 months after Ziad had passed that I joined. And I have to say, for me, it's like a little family, a dysfunctional family, but a family nevertheless, because we don't have any perfect families. We're not Leave It to Beaver, are we? How boring that would be. But I miss all of them, especially right now in the COVID. And like most people here, this is, I guess, the new way that we all have to communicate with each other. I can honestly say they didn't apologize for my husband's death. Two summers ago, two or three summers ago, I've lost track. They did give us compensation. But like most of my Israeli friends said, if just admitting by giving me, even if it's a dollar, they admit guilt. But those guys that killed my husband still get to go home and hug their families. They didn't serve a day in prison. They know where I live. They know what I look like. They know what my daughters look like. But you know, I'm not scared about them. They should be more scared, because I don't know how a person, a human being, could hurt somebody and live with that, because they have to live with that for the rest of their life. So this little family of ours, this helps. Just the one-on-one reaction that I would get from either Ben Kfar or Gilly or Rami when we did meetings. It's almost like a reunion, this is, because it's been a while since I've seen anybody from the forum, to be honest with you. We do many projects, and one I can honestly tell you that my daughter, who's the youngest, Yasmin, she was looking forward to it actually when I actually told her the other day, because Arab Aramin, who called me up and he said, Maura, we're thinking about doing the summer camp. Would Yasmin like to join? And she just started her job. She'd been waiting to get back to work, and she just started a new job in the city center. And I wasn't sure. I said, I don't think so. She needs the money. She wants that money. I didn't think she was going to do it. But actually, she had heard from her cousin, and she came running outside. I think it was like 3-4 days later. And she's like, I have called. She's like, we're having the summer camp. I will tell them something. I don't care. I want to go. And I was like, okay, well, let me call Arab and you can talk to him. And then she was a little bit disappointed because, you know, because of the COVID, he said, no, it's not on. They're too scared, I guess, for the Israelis and the Arabs.
Thank you so much, Mara, for sharing, Gili, for sharing your experiences. We are at the top of the hour. We have a few questions we'd like to throw you away. Thank you so much for sharing these powerful experiences. You're more than a family. You challenge both societies in the most fundamental way. And we have a few questions. I'd like you maybe to touch on it, maybe stay a little bit past the hour. I was in Israel last year for the Joint Memorial Service, and I can describe to you the feeling of being surrounded by thousands of people who share, who joined learning. This is the second largest memorial service in Israel on a very sacred day, being done jointly, which was an incredible experience. And I saw Gili on TV debating the anchor about letting the Palestinians in. There's a tradition, the Israeli government tries to prevent the Palestinian partners coming in. And I'd like just to have, if you can touch on the experience of your societies when you engage them on these work, whether it's school or the Joint Memorial Service or kind of a more political rejection of this partnership. One of the questions we had, if you can roll that in, is why do some people react to loss in the conflict seeking revenge? How do you deal with those emotions that come up that you're familiar with? I guess that just touch on those things. Whoever wants to start.
Moira, please.
I can only speak from my own experience. The same experience that you went through was the same experience I think everybody goes through. It is very touching to see Israelis and Palestinians in a stadium. That's where I went for the first time, was in a stadium, and I couldn't, it was so large. And people were hugging me, and we had to, I had to go on stage and talk about my husband and these things. And there was just too many people there that was asking me questions and these things. And it was surreal. I can't tell you, basically, you know, I don't seek revenge, so I don't know how that feels. Realistically, you'll have to ask Gilly on that one. You know, how maybe he can go ahead and talk more about what he felt.
I must say that I'm in a quite strange position with the memorial ceremony, because from one hand, I'm the person from our staff that together with the producer from the Combats for Peace movement that is in charge of this ceremony. And a few months before that, I work around the clock. I've done this year. For my fourth year, but I've never been there, because for me, every Memorial Day Eve, I have the ceremony which I'm going every year in Jerusalem with my kids. They cannot miss it. I cannot miss it. It's a very traditional ceremony from the scouts where my brother was belonged. So a few minutes before the siren, I close my phone, and then for 1 hour I'm there, and then I open my phone and work the few days more after the ceremony. From the other hand, this is a very important event, very controversial. We pay a huge price because of that. From one hand, right-wing people and leaders are simply lying and saying that we are doing this ceremony for terrorists and light candles for murders, etc., etc. They cannot or they don't want to understand that we see the parallel grief from both sides. Very difficult for them. From the other hand, there are so many people in Israel that this, and maybe only this ceremony, for them is the real ceremony and the real way to be in the Memorial Day. So I don't know if I answered your question, but this is a very complicated day.
In a very unique effort. I mean, nothing like this exists on this scale, to my knowledge, at all. So it's really special. The next few questions, let me roll them up, is one is, we are now focused on stopping the annexation. And one of the questions here is, what a unilateral annexation, what would that change to you? What does that mean to you? How do you see it? And I guess if you can, you know, combine that with what can we do to help this work here in America? What should our role be, and what ways can we contribute to this incredible and unique work? to either of you.
Moira, please.
Gilly first. Okay. For me, you can go to the polls and vote. Go and vote. Because we don't need Donald Trump. We already saw what he, how he moved the embassy. And I'm afraid, unfortunately, it's just getting worse and worse here, realistically, with somebody like him in power. So go to the polls and vote. And help us. Help us on our journey, because this takes a lot of money. Especially just the summer camps. The summer camps are like something like $60,000. And it increases every year. It's not really about the money, but unfortunately it is, because Donald Trump took away our aid. And I think that was 1/3 of our money gone, that we had grants to do so many projects. And now those projects are in the garbage. So it helps for Palestinians and Israelis to get down and sit at the table and just start talking. And that's all we ask, is just to start having a dialogue. Gilly?
Well, if the question is how this will affect me personally, it will not affect me personally. It will affect Israel. Must say that I'm quite optimistic now, because I don't see that it will happen. And if it will, it will happen, I guess, in a very small scale. You know, sometimes we think that our only hope for this situation, like, two options. One, the two brave leaders from both sides will finish this business. And the other hope is that looking for pressure from other countries, not from Trump, of course, but maybe from the person who will hopefully replace him, hopefully from Europe. But I don't know, living here, you must be optimistic.
Well, seeing your work and what you are capable of doing, going through what you went through, is to me where hope is. I mean, if that's what you can see it in action, you can see it, what is possible. You know, spark the imagination of, I think, so many people who encounter this work of what is possible if we just choose peace and reconciliation, and instead of violence and war. And I'd like to thank you on behalf of partners. Thank you, Shiri. Thank you, Moira Gili, for sharing your story and sharing your work. It is very inspiring to see and hear, and I hope that folks will check it out and look deeper into the work. I don't miss an opportunity to listen to Family Circle, to a Parent Circle speak whenever I can. It's always incredible. So with that, I'd like to officially thank you. And in a reminder that this is a conversation with Israel and Palestine, hosted by Partners for Progressive Israel. And thank you, Shiri. And thank you for the staff of American Friends of Parents Circle and Family Forum and Partners for Progressive Israel. And to learn more about Partners for Progressive Israel and our future programming, you can go to Stop Annexation Now campaign. You go to progressiveisrael.org. And please contribute if you can. Any contribution will be matched. So every dollar you give is worth $2. In our fight to stop the annexation and end the occupation. And I think that's it. I want to wish you a great and safe rest of the day. I thank you for everybody for joining. And I hope to see you soon in Israel, Palestine. And thank you.
Thank you, Gili.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, partners. Thanks, Gili and Moira.
Thank you, Sherry.
Bye-bye, everybody.